Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the What's Your Bottom Line radio show with speaker, writer, and motivator, Angie Strader. Join Angie and expert guests from around the world for these weekly straightforward discussions about what it takes to be successful in your personal and professional life. We all have a bottom line. What's yours? Well, let's get down to it right now. Here's your host, Angie Strader.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Angie Strader, your host of What's Your Bottom Line radio show on Diva Toolbox Radio Network. And I'm so happy to have you joining us today. And I know you will enjoy this time we have with our special guest, Dr. Sheldon Cardner. And I got to tell you, Dr. Cardner, I am reading his book. And you're going to want to get this book. I'm just telling you right now. So make sure you have information, you know, where you can bring up a website and get onto Dr. Cardner's information, because you're going to want to tune in to this and get more information. But before I get started, I just wanted to let you know, because we are a live show, that gives us the opportunity to answer your questions live on the air, or for you to chat in the chat box if you're on your computer. And if you want to ask a question from the chat, all you need to do is type the word question and your question right after that, I'll be monitoring that throughout the show and looking for your input. If there's something you'd like me to share with the doctor, I will do that as well. And if you would like to call in, or even if you would like to call in to finish listening to the show, maybe you have to go pick the kids up from a play date or something like that. I would normally say if you have to pick the kids up from school, but it's still summer. We're right in the middle of summer, so kids are out of school, but if you want to pop in a headset, because I certainly don't want you driving while you're on the phone unless you're on hands-free. But anyway, getting to the point, let's give you the number. So if you'd like to dial in to either ask a question live on the air, or if you just like to listen to the phone over the phone, you can dial in 347-838-9706. That's 347-838-9706. If you would like to ask a question, it'll give you the prompt that if you press one on your keypad, that'll let me know that you are in the queue, that you would like to ask a question or say something live on the air, and then I can bring you on for that. Now, I tell everyone every time, this is your chance for your weekly motivation, inspiration, business success, personal therapy, counseling, what have you. You just never know the guests that I'm going to bring onto the show. But this is your opportunity every week to invest that 1 hour of your time that's really going to make a difference in your life and help you lead a healthier, more productive, hopefully happier existence, a better life. So what also helps, and I have found this, is that you got to get your pen and paper ready. Or if you're on your laptop or your computer and you can jot some notes there or open some websites, some bookmarks, some things, do that as well. But, you know, something about that transfer of knowledge from listening through your hand and writing it on paper, it just really drives the point home. It solidifies. You're much more likely to recall the information, but you can also go back and read it later. And I know that I do. So get your pen and paper ready. Be ready to get involved. And I think you're going to learn some things today. And not only do we have Dr. Cardner that is our special guest, we also have our weekly expert guest, Lisa Duty. So I'm going to bring Lisa on in just a minute. Lisa is our social media strategist. So we're going to bring her on in just a minute. But I wanted to share something with you. Those of you who follow me on my Facebook or through Twitter may know this already, and I'm just sharing this because now that I have a little bit better perspective on things and I can laugh about it, trust me, I wasn't laughing earlier. Wait till you hear this story. So I'm sharing it with you because I think it's appropriate to kind of talk about our topic today, and that being stress and anger management. And so let's start back yesterday. Yesterday, my husband went to go pick up someone who ran out of gas. In the meantime, he ran a nail over, drove his car too far, and got a flat tire. flat tire drove his car too far, and then he had to have the tire replaced. Okay, so that happens. So we're bouncing cars around, and I end up driving his car home to drive it in this morning to work. So I'm driving in this morning to work, and I get sideswiped by a young lady, bless her heart, freaked her out. Everything's okay, nothing that can't be fixed. But she was really upset, brand new car, and she's in college, and you know, so on and so forth. So got her calmed down. We're taking care of the car. I'm waiting for my husband to come pick me up. In the meantime, my car, which was at our shop, at our business, somebody was backing it out of out of our facility and backed it into his own truck. So we had the tire down having to be replaced, the Camaro sideswiped, and the Acura backed into one of our other people's trucks. So then his bumper is messed up, all within minutes of each other. I had a hard time seeing the humor in all of that while I was, just hanging from the ceiling with my fingernails. But, you know, now that I look at it, and obviously with my personality and who I am, it didn't take me long to realize, okay, one, nobody's hurt. Two, there's nothing that can't be fixed. Three, let's keep it all in perspective. There's much worse things going on out there. I have friends who are in really dire situations and having a really hard time. These are just cars. And at the time, I got to admit, I couldn't see it as just cars. I had some friends say I would just go home, crawl into bed, and cry. Well, that wasn't an option. So here I am today having a good laugh about it, saying it is what it is, and let's move forward. And just wanted to share that little story with you because I could be freaking out right now. I could have just canceled my whole day. Why would I do that? Wouldn't want to do that. Life goes on, right? Okay, so that's my little what's going on in Angie's world for the week. And all the cars should be running fine and back to being in good order within days, I think. Who knows? Weeks, whatever. It'll be what it's supposed to be. Well, let's get started. Hello, Lisa. I see Lisa's on, and I'm going to bring her on right now. Now, those of you who had an opportunity to tune in, I think it was last show was with Lisa Duty. She is my what I call social media strategist. She is our expert monthly guest. She will be on the fourth Tuesday of every month sharing her expertise on social media. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to her live show, go back and listen to the archive. You can see it on my website or on the Blog Talk Radio lineup. And just to give you an idea, Lisa is a virtual assistant and she is a social media guru. She makes amazing things happen. I'm not going to tie up any more time. I'm going to bring Lisa on and see what she's going to share with us today. Hello, Lisa. How are you?
Hi, Angie. How are you doing today?
I'm having an interesting day. Let's put it that way.
It sounds like it. And, you know, I think your featured guest following me, I think that his topic is going to be quite valuable, especially to me also today with some things that I've been going through personally. So I'm glad I'm going to get to listen to him also. I was thinking about what we should talk about today. And, you know, everybody wants to know how to grow their Twitter following. And so I thought that might be a good topic for today. And what focuses around that is, you know, how to grow your following, how to do proper etiquette, that kind of thing. I want to ask you a question real fast, Angie. How long do I have?
You have about 10 minutes.
Okay. I'm just wanting to make sure from this time. I didn't want to take any of the next guest time.
Okay.
What I would like to talk about first is how to grow your Twitter following. There are several things that you need to do that. It's essential that you actually register your Twitter ID on Twello.com, and that's TWELLOW.com. That's Twello, like yellow. And the reason I'm even mentioning this is because, you know, being a social media marketing strategist that I am, of course, I have my Twitter ID registered out there. And because that I have grown my following and I diligently used Twitter, I came up number one on Twello when somebody went out to search for an assistant that they needed in Dallas. And because I worked really hard to grow my following, it came up. And so I thought that'd be a great topic for me to talk to your guest about today. I'm sure you're curious a little too, maybe, Angie?
Oh, absolutely, Lisa. You definitely have it figured out. And I did want to say congratulations on taking your passion and being able to show the results by, and I'm just going to throw her name out there, by Mari Smith finding you on Twello and having that opportunity for you to get to work with her while she was in Dallas for the conference. So congratulations on that.
Thank you, thank you. It was so exciting to get to know her. She's such a real nice, wonderful person. Well, I'm sure you wrote the whole, you saw the whole blog post I wrote about just how great she is and how real she
yes.
is.
Yes, yes.
And I credit all of that back to growing my Twitter following. And there's several things that people need to do that. One of them is, of course, registering their Twitter ID on Twello, as I mentioned before. But the second part of that is, you know, having conversation with people on Twitter, being a conversationalist, retweeting people, sharing information, being a resource, not just being what you would call a spammer, just throwing out, you know, all day long, buy my services or check out my website or go to my Facebook or whatever. That's not what Twitter is about. And so what I was going to do is give everybody a few tips on how to do that. And I talked about branding when I was on the show last month. And a little continuation on that is talking about how to find great content. We talked about Google Reader. Use a reader, follow blog posts that are of interest to you, and then you go out and share that information on the social networking sites such as Twitter. And what you're going to do is you're going to attract people that are interested in that kind of information. And because you're going to attract them, and how they're going to find you is because they can actually search on Twitter certain keywords. And so they're going to search on Twitter for certain keywords such as social media or maybe it's real estate or wherever the person's industry is that they're trying to grow their following. And they're going to see those words and then they're going to follow you because you shared information that was valuable to them. And so that's a really important way to grow your following. Also, retweeting other people. The people that you follow, retweet the content that is interesting to you, would be interesting to your followers, but also that person, when you retweet them, you draw their attention. Your name is sticking out in their head. They now see you and they think, wow, so-and-so retweeted me. I need to retweet them. And that's part of the strategy because with a retweet, for those that are not using the Twitter account, when you retweet somebody, you are tweeting, you are sending that piece of information to everybody that follows you on Twitter. So you retweet people on Twitter, and you send that article or that piece of information to everybody that is following you. Now, there are several purposes for doing that. One, because it gets people, you're sending great information to the people that follow you, but you're also drawing your attention, as I mentioned before, to the person that you retweeted. And by doing that, they're going to want to retweet you. And so when they retweet you, you are now reaching the people that follow them. Is that making sense, Angie?
Oh, absolutely. I'm right there with you. I'm glad you explained the retweeting, the RT, and what that means.
Yeah, it's really piece important of the strategy because if you're just out there pushing content all day, and you're not retweeting other people, and that's an important piece of the conversation that you're not giving back, so people don't want to give back to you. Now, with that being said, whenever anybody retweets you, it is important to have a conversation with them, to thank them for that. That does a couple of different things. You're thanking them for retweeting you. They're thanking to myself. You're putting your name in front of them again, or your Twitter ID in that case. You're throwing your Twitter ID out in front of them again, and they're thinking, wow, I need to learn more about this person. They thank me every time I retweet them. And so that's an important piece of the puzzle when you do a retweet. And I know this is more about Twitter etiquette, what I'm saying right here. I like to call it Twitticket, actually. But the reason it's important is because growing your following is all about, you know, being a person that people want to connect to other people. So it's about retweeting people. It's about thanking people. If you see somebody share an article that you think is really great, do a mention back to them or a reply and say, hey, I really like this article. Here is the reason why I liked it. Do that. Again, it's about creating conversation because now on Friday, when they do Follow Friday, and I'm going to talk about that for a minute for people that don't know what Follow Friday is, on Friday, all the Twitter users, actually, not everybody, but a lot of people, they'll go out there and recommend people that they are following, that they think to their followers that they should be following. And so they do a Follow Friday. So once you retweet people enough and you have this conversation with them and you thank them and you mention them, then they're going to give you what is called a Follow Friday, hopefully, which is a recommendation on Twitter to all of the people that follow them. And that's one way. It's very important that you will get followers. Now, what I like to do, Angie, and I mentioned this a little bit in my personal branding last week, is I like to connect with people that have a lot of followers on Twitter. Because if I get them to mention my Twitter ID, if I get them to retweet me, that's like a plug for me, you know what I mean, to everybody that they're following. I want to mention real quickly here that on Twitter, whenever you do a reply, because people sometimes will be concerned about, well, I'm going to flood my stream with all these replies. Whenever you do a reply on Twitter, that's where you hit the little arrow going back to the left to do the reply. When you do a reply, the only person that sees that reply is the person that you're replying to and everybody that you have common followers. So you're not necessarily, if you have 10,000 people following you and you do a reply, it's only going to go to, if y'all have 500 of common followers, then those 500 people would see it and the person you're replying to. And so you don't have to worry as much about filling your stream with conversation, because some people want to avoid that on the Twitter stream.
Okay, new information for me. Didn't know that. That's awesome. So
yes.
Okay, good.
And I actually, because whenever I like to thank people for a retweet or something like that, because that I want all of my followers to see that I'm thanking them for what they did for me, I actually will actually put in front of the, you know, the at sign and their Twitter ID so it doesn't show up as a reply, I will actually put thank you and then the Twitter ID. Mm-hmm. And that way it is going to all of my followers because I want my followers to see that I'm thanking people for retweeting.
Okay, that's what I do, but I didn't know what I was accomplishing by doing that. So by default.
Right.
Okay, good. Okay,
right.
That's good to know.
So that is an important piece of information that you can think of. It's a strategy piece because you can do it as just a reply and just put their Twitter ID and know that that's only the people that follow you and them and are going to see it. Or you can put like a thank you and their Twitter ID in front and everybody that follows you will see it. Mm-hmm. So just a little piece of advice there on that. Another important thing, way to grow your following is, you know, again, having that conversation with them, retweeting them, doing the Follow Friday. A lot of times, you'll have to go out and give somebody a Follow Friday first. But they're going to give you one back because they'll feel obligated. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's about strategy. You give people a Follow Friday, and they will give you a Follow Friday back. It doesn't always happen. But a lot of times it will happen. And after a while, when you're giving people these recommendations on Twitter, then they're going to just think about you automatically because you're going to start being known as the connector or the person I want to mention me. And you'll notice your followers are going to start going up because they're going to be mentioning you. They're going to be retweeting you. And when they retweet you and one of the people that follows them reads that article, they're going to go, wow, this was good. I need to follow them. And they're going to follow. And so you're going to notice your following numbers start to going up. I had a client that I worked with, and she had like 200 people following her. And, you know, she's like, it's stuck. And so I went through, and we spent, I think it was 2 hours together on a training. This was about 4 months ago, and she has almost 2,000 people following her now.
Mm.
And she hasn't even been aggressive because she could have had more than that. Because there's one piece I mentioned earlier about using Twello, going and registering your Twitter ID. Well, there's one thing that I hadn't mentioned that I wanted to go into a little further about using Twello. What you can do on Twello after you've registered Twitter ID is, of course, you're going to assign what categories your business or your services fall into. You can go follow people through Twello based on keywords, where they live, etc. And you can go in and just start following them. Well, when you follow people, a lot of times they'll follow you back. And so you're going to start growing your followers.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, Lisa. Now we're getting close on time here. So can you touch on the importance of the ratio of follow to those that, like if you're following, they're not following back? What
yes,
could potentially
I can certainly
happen?
touch I can certainly touch on that. There are some ratios that come into play. The first level is at 1,200. You actually have to have more than 800 people following you once you get to 1,200 people. You can't follow more people until you have 1,200 following you. I mean, 800 following you. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that is one ratio where it comes into play. Now, you can use tools such as refollow.com, mm-hmm. And that's refollow.com, to unfollow people that are not following you. I do have to caution here. It's actually a good tool to use, and you can just check these little check boxes to show you people that are not following you back. And normally, and this is the one thing that makes people nervous, Angie, that they don't understand, if people, okay, so they're tweeting all day long, but maybe they only have 200 followers. Well, they don't understand that only those 200 people are seeing them. So they're hesitant to unfollow them. Well, those people aren't seeing their tweets anyway. So unfollowing them is not, they're not going to lose anything on that. Unless those people they're unfollowing is sharing some content that they're wanting to see.
Right.
So they're not losing anything but unfollowing people. So they can use refollow. Now, the caution I was going to mention is that Twitter has some harsh rules about bulk unfollowing. And so they have to be really careful about that or they can get their account shut down. So I just want to mention that piece there. So refollow is a great way to do that, and I know we're running out of time, so I'm just going to say real quickly, the next level that they're going to run into Twitter following issues on is once they get to 2,001 people. Mm-hmm. Once you get to 2,001, and that's not people following them, but people they're wanting to follow. Once you get to 2,001, there is a ratio, and Twitter does not disclose what the ratio is. They say it's different for everybody, but it's usually 10%, I have found. So once you get to following 2,001 people, you have to have within 10% of that amount following you. So like 2,001, you need to have 1,800 people following you, or you're not allowed to follow anybody else until you either unfollow people or get your numbers up.
Yeah, and that is the trick. That is the trick. This is great information. So if I want to recap real quick here, Lisa, one thing, valuable tool, and I know a lot of us just learned about this, I did, was last time when you were on the show is Twello. It's like mm-hmm. yellow, but Twello. And that refollow.com, I haven't used that particularly. I use follow, not follow, one, whatever that is. And this refollow mm-hmm. sounds easier, refollow.com. It is really important to get engaged, build the relationships. It does take a little bit of a different skill to build relationships virtually, but it can be done. Remember, Fridays come up, and you want to do your Follow Fridays. That's pound or hashtag Follow Friday, and recommend those that you would like to see your friends connect with. And definitely, Lisa, real quick, your Twitter, Facebook, and website.
They can connect with me on Twitter. It's Lisa Duty, LISSADUTY. If they want to connect with me on Facebook, it's facebook.com/ Lisa Duty, LISSADUTY. And my website is lisaduty.com, again with two S's.
Perfect. I've got your link up there for the website. It's up on the chat, so people click on that. And I know you have, because you're the good social media strategist that you are, you have all those links on your website.
I really appreciate you having me on the show, Angie. And if anybody has anything they'd like to learn more about before next month, just shoot me a little note or to you, and I'll be glad to focus on it.
Well, perfect, Lisa. Thank you so much. And you will be back on the show in about 4 weeks. So the fourth Tuesday of every month, Lisa will be on. And Lisa, stay tuned and listen in to Dr. Cardner, because I do understand that you need a little bit of this information. We all do, I think. You know, I'm having Dr. Cardner on today. And then the whole month of August is going to be about stress and anger management. So that's a whole month. Now, let me tell you real quick about Dr. Cardner. I have his book here. He is the co-author of Breaking Free, How Chains from Childhood Keep Us from What We Want. For over 40 years, Dr. Cardner has written, lectured, and taught extensively while practicing psychodynamic psychotherapy. Always on the cutting edge, he's often called the father of focused dynamic therapy and conducted seminars in ultra-brief therapy for a number of years. After completing a psychiatry residency at the UCLA, Dr. Cardner joined the faculty where he is now a clinical professor in psychiatry. I'm not trying to shortchange his bio. I'm trying to get the information out there so we can bring him on to give him time. He has been a fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, board certified in psychiatry and neurology, and graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Mathematical Engineering and subsequently a doctorate from the School of Medicine with honors. Dr. Cardner, initially a mechanical engineer who became a certified as a professional mechanical engineer after accumulating work experience and completing a certifying examination. He says he credits his educational discipline for helping him to be able to synthesize relevant data, a patient's history, and presenting problems into working hypotheses that are readily explained to patients, enabling them to engage mutually in the work of psychotherapy. And Dr. Cardner, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the invitation. And with that introduction, I'm very anxious to hear what I'm going to say. I also have to just comment quickly on Lisa's discussion. It was almost like listening to a foreign language in the sense that I'm a bit of a technologic Neanderthal. If I recall, Twitter is limited to 144 characters. Is that correct?
I believe it's 140. Lisa, is it 140? I don't know, she's probably got us on mute.
At any rate, it put me in mind of Shakespeare's comment that brevity is the soul of wit. So if Twitter is that limited, it must be an extraordinarily witty engagement. I also was put in mind with your story of the unfortunate sequence of events of a Roman philosopher's comment that I've always liked. In fact, I keep a copy of it in my waiting room, and it says, in essence, that I am upset not by events, but by my perception of events. And it struck me that, indeed, if you were a professional demolition derby driver, you'd be delighted by today's activities. So it really, depending on what one's perspective is or perception, that very much informs not the external event, but how we react to those events. And, of course, that's where our segue, as it were, into our discussion about, and the subtitle of the book, certainly Breaking Free, is exactly how chains from childhood keep us from what we want. And there's a couple of double entendres in the title that we'll hopefully clarify. I think if we go back one step, and that is to what made Freud so objectionable to 19th century, quote, rational man. And I think it was the bitter pill of his saying that you are not aware of the fact that there are forces within you about which you have no knowledge that determine what you're going to do and how you're going to feel. And carrying it forward to Epictetus's comment, and how you're going to perceive things in your life. And that then became kind of ensnarled in a lot of technical jargon. And it wasn't until Eric Byrne and his most famous book, The Games People Play, that he kind of he worked his way through medical school as a children's book writer. So he had a marvelous way of writing in straight, ordinary English, and I'm greatly indebted to him in terms of developing and modifying a system that he had, in which I describe that we all have within us a here-and-now adult who looks at the world from the eyes of the present, and then that force that has to do with the past, then and there, of unresolved issues from our own past. So we have an adult and a child that characterize, and child, I mean that part of us that still harbors unresolved issues from a past time. And so the conflict in our lives is really the interface between our present selves as adults and the forces that went into the development of that child experience.
So, Dr. Carter, is that one of the reasons why we find that even with our best intentions, things often go awry, things get a little out of place?
Right, and that's the awareness that, wait a minute, there's someone else behind the wheel. And suddenly the adult is in the back seat instead of behind the driver's in the driver's seat. And I think that very much powers conflicts that we then find ourselves swept along with. One would seem to ask, well, why not, if we are aware of that adult self, why don't we just do those adult things? And the reason has to do with something very powerful that is theoretically, at least, only present in childhood. Now, in reality, it does occur subsequently. And that is that we have two parameters of learning as kids. One is we have absolutely no option, that whatever we have in our family circumstance is always better than the alternative. And the alternative, sadly, there are instances that occur regularly of an infant abandoned in a restroom or in a dumpster. And it emphasizes, as drastic and dramatic and awful of those experiences, it reminds us that if we don't form a connection, that connection, no matter what it's like, is always better than the dumpster. So the first thing, we have no option. If we're going to survive, we must have a connection with an adult, because we're born in a helpless state as human beings for some prolonged period of time. The second aspect that's so powerful is that when we have no option, we tend to idealize what we have. We don't need an option. We've got the best there is. And compared to the dumpster, it's true. Now, as I said, that those two parameters of no option and idealizing theoretically should never occur again in one's life aside from childhood. But in fact, it does occur in susceptible individuals in something called the Stockholm Syndrome, and that is where one is taken hostage, and when rescued, rescuers are stunned to find, or they were originally when the syndrome was defined, that the hostages were championing their hostage takers against their rescuers, and they were idealizing those hostage takers. And there is a very vivid example of a return of a childlike experience. When somebody's holding an Uzi on your at your forehead and they determine whether you live or you die, then it replicates what it was like as a child. You have no option, and you tend then, in those susceptible individuals, to idealize the situation. So it's that parameter of idealization of the optionlessness that forms the child and what I call the need. Be it ever so miserable, there's no place like home. And again, always contrasted to the dumpster. So those forces within us have a need, and I use that word very, very specifically. The child in us has a need to maintain the cues that tell us that we're home. As miserable as it may be, we're safe, we're not in the dumpster. And then the adult, I use the word very specifically, want. So what the when what the child needs and the adult wants run parallel, there's no problem. Very few people are like that. Those people can run on pretty much automatic pilot. Their needs have been converted into what they want, and they continue on in their life. An example would be a child who's raised in a family that values honesty and ethics and morality. Those are desirable characteristics, and they get transformed into what the adult wants. No problem. It's the part of us that have needs that don't fit with what we want, and yet we're imbued with survival, that represent the forces that we struggle with in terms of determining some of our current behavior.
So, Dr. Cardner, if I'm understanding, if you, as an adult, you may feel, okay, these are the things, and I want to make sure I get my needs and wants clear here. So I want to do certain things, and so I'm working towards that, being successful in business or what have you. But as that child in me, that child that has certain needs, when the adult starts getting outside that comfort zone that people may be familiar with, or when things start feeling a little uncomfortable, is that when the child comes in there and says, oh, wait a minute, we need to get back to my needs are these things over here. Even if it's destructive, it's better than the alternative. Is that kind of a layman's? Am I?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, exactly. And a terribly prosaic example of that is the, and it's often, so I characterize it as a little girl because it often is, but it's not exclusively little girls who are abused, either physically or sexually. Little boys, that unfortunately occurs as well. That adult part of that emerging, growing child is saying, I don't want abuse. I will not put up with it. I can't stand it. I can't wait till I can get out of this awful home. They leave the home and go from frying pan to fire and find themselves in that example, hypothetical example that unfortunately occurs often. The young lady now finds herself attracted to and marrying an abusive guy. Now, does that mean she wants abuse? Of course not. But it is a measure in a very dramatic way of that need the child had, that if I'm not abused, I'm not home. And if I'm not home, I'm in the dumpster. So that force of the need is imbued with survival. If I'm not abused, I won't survive. And, of course, the paradox is that abuse can reach a point where you don't survive. That is the worst case being acted out, or worst expectations being fulfilled. But at no time is it that that woman wants abuse. It's that there is a force within her that says, if I don't have that cue, that need cue, I don't survive. That's powerful. And it's that interface between that child part of us that has these residual needs that have not been resolved and the adult wants. If you think about that interface, that's where conflict, emotional conflict, develops and is maintained.
And it makes so much sense. And I have to say, in reading your book, Dr. Cardner, and those of you who are just joining us, we are joined today by our special guest, Dr. Cardner. He is the University of California at Los Angeles clinical professor of psychiatry, and he is the author of Breaking Free, How Chains from Childhood Keep Us from What We Want. And we are talking about the inner conflict we have of the child within us and what the child needs, and the conflict with the adult who has wants, and how what that conflict does to us. The question I'd asked is, why do our best intentions seem to go awry? I mean, we have these great intentions, and I'm sure a lot of us look back, Dr. Cardner, and say, or we look at other people if we're not looking at ourselves, within ourselves, because it's sometimes easier to look at others and say, why is she doing that? Why, if she came from that situation, why does she exhibit these destructive behaviors? Whether it's the extreme case of sexual abuse and then ongoing abuse in an adult relationship, but even simple things like, I use the reference of business, right? It seems like a lot of people get right to that edge of, you know, they're right there. They may have to stretch a little bit more to reach that optimum level of success, and then they do something destructive, or they allow something to happen. So you can use that in both ways, not just exactly in the extreme, but as simple things on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. And the idea that for a child, if being encouraged and acknowledged for experiences, that is, that the child is told, no, it's all right. If a mistake happens, it's a learning opportunity. Learn from it and grow as a result of it. But if a child is reprimanded, you made a mistake, you're bad, or you don't know what you're doing, or we sadly sometimes hear parents say, you stupid kid, that gets internalized. That becomes part of the cue that says, I'm not supposed to be successful. I'm not supposed to achieve. I'm worst case, I'm a screw-up. I'm just not going to accomplish things. So when the adult, desiring, wanting to have success, reaches near it, then that child part says, oh, wait a minute, you're about to leave home. You better not do that because that means I'm an orphan. So we better pull back that adult want and allow the child need to continue.
Is there any hope? We do have hope, right, Dr. Gardner? Tell me, please, that we do have hope to be able to break this vicious cycle. Okay?
Absolutely, and that's why the book is certainly an attempt to communicate not only to professionals. What's contained in the book is lecture material that went to either professional groups or lay groups, because as far as I'm concerned, the concept of the awareness of what it is that our patients may be struggling with, and for patients, what it is they are struggling with, is so important to understand without the jargon. Again, I'm indebted to Eric Bird. He had a wonderful saying. He said, most professional writing is done in Martian. Very few write in English. And I think he was certainly, in reading any of his material, it's very clear cut, and I'm hoping that that influence is reflected in this book, that we're trying to become aware of those forces within us. One of the awful things, as you're describing, observing people engaged in conflict, a woman who may get out of a relationship in which she's with an alcoholic, finding herself dating a guy who's drinks too much, does she want, and people will often look at that and say, well, she just doesn't want a good relationship. And, of course, that's nonsense. Everybody wants to be healthy. What we don't realize is that if the child within us learn to pay a dollar for every nickel we get, then that's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so we pay this usurious kind of rate to get a little bit. We get the nickel, but it's cost us a buck. And that does not have to continue. And that's why the subtitle has the double meaning. The chains from childhood keep us. That is, they give us security. But they keep us from what we want, and want having that adult connotation of what it is that we truly would like to have versus our needs.
I get that in reading the title now that I see that. I understand that more clearly now. Now, I have to say, for the listeners that are either live on right now, if you have any questions, please share them in the chat, or if you'd like to call in, please feel free to do that as well. The number that you can call is 347-838-9706. If you have a question directly for Dr. Gardner that you would like us to address, please call in. We'd be happy to take your call, but I have to tell you that if you have children, if you plan on having children, or if you were a child once yourself, you need to get this book. And I know I say that about a lot of books. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is not the kind of book you can sit down and breeze through over a couple of days, or, you know, easy reading at night. And it's not intended to be. I'm sure, Dr. Gardner, you would agree. There's some real in-depth information in here that lays the platform and it builds on, so that you fully understand the concepts on which the doctor is sharing with us today. So I know in looking at this, these are the kind of things, especially if you have young children or you're just thinking about having children, get the book. It'll help you understand how we can raise our children to maybe not have to deal with these conflicts or deal with them as much when they're older. Would you agree, Dr. Gardner?
Oh, absolutely. And you put me in mind when you were saying what you described. I often will tell patients, because I think it's so important to understand that parents are people who were once children. I have never met a parent who wasn't once a child. I
You still looking?
I joke with my patients that if you know any parent who wasn't once a child, please let me meet them because I'd love to talk to them. But what I try to emphasize by that is that the unresolved conflict from that childhood gets carried over, and sadly, from generation to generation to generation. And we can, in those people who have awareness of their family's history going back a few generations, begin to see how each person has been invested in this kind of conflict from generation to generation. And I point out to couples particularly that, look, what consenting adults want to do to one another is their business within the law. But if you have kids, I don't mind putting a burr under your saddle so you don't ride so easily. Because otherwise, if you don't deal with the issues, you're just going to do as your parents did. Pass those unresolved issues to you. You will pass them on to your kids, and God knows it'll go on another few generations. So I think it's so important that the buck stops here, as Trubin said, and that people bite the bullet and look at these powerful forces about which they don't have full awareness. And I think it is extraordinarily important to recognize that with that awareness comes something we never had as a kid, and that is choice. We can choose to continue if for some reason we wish to, or we can choose to be different. And I think choice is what defines an important aspect of the difference between adult and child.
That is key, and it is about choice. And, you know, I say that a lot of the work that I do is I explain to people, just as myself today, my car fiasco, cars, that I had a choice, and I knew I had a choice. And this is a conversation I had with my mom. I said, I have a choice here. What I really want to do is have that full-out temper tantrum, and I want to throw things, and I want to cry, and I want to have a fit. But the other option is I keep it in perspective and I handle this a different way. I knew that I was at that point of making a choice, but what I'm seeing in your book and what you're explaining is it's not as readily top of mind when you start exhibiting some of these behaviors that are destructive. So it takes a deeper level of understanding to get to that that place.
And the reason is that we threaten that early child experience of predictability, safety. I know it's miserable. I know it's awful, but at least I know what it is. It's mm-hmm. sort of, I like to amend the expression that war is hell, comma. But who knows what the alternative would be like? And so humans have found themselves dragged back into the familiar, as awful and as distressing as war is. But it's known. And for a brief moment with the atomic weaponry, we had a pause. Wait a minute, that's a little more awful than we wanted to engage in. Maybe we better think about diplomacy or talking about it. Now what has happened is the attempt to develop battlefield nuclear weapons rather than, so at least we go back to the predictable. War is hell, but who knows what peace would be like. So it becomes that unknown that we find ourselves dragged back, and that's on a global example. Mm. And I think that relationships within an individual, within family, within couples, within neighbors, within nations, all have, in my view, that same kind of characteristic, that the world is populated by very large children. There are very few adults. And
yeah,
I think
that,
when you,
such
when
a great describe,
visual. Go ahead.
No, I just said that's a great visual. If you think of it, it truly is. It's very true.
Yeah, and there's a squabbling in a sandbox, as it were, that you can see at the United Nations or other places. They squabble like kids in a sandbox. The problem is those kids are dangerously armed, and that's the problem. And, you know, the old expression, the difference between men and boys is the price of toys. And I think that too often that's the case. The quote, pseudo-men or pseudo-adult, as I prefer to call it, can afford weaponry that is terribly, terribly threatening to human survival at this point in time.
Right. So we're not talking just in our own inner conflict within ourselves and thinking that narrow-minded, it's all about me. That's kind of that child part coming out. It's all about me. But it, like you said, I didn't think about that originally either. It is global. It is because we're all acting in that same way, whether we're aware of it or not. So, Dr. Cardner, what would you tell our listeners is a way that if they find that they're constantly getting in their own way of success, or they're they see this cycle repeating over and over again. What are a couple of pointers you can share with our listeners today to break free of this and become adults?
I think the willingness to self-reflect is extremely important. I think there's a kind of sequence of a healthy progression. The first is that we identify a problem. That is, that we can see there's a problem. There's some people who refuse to even identify. That's even a very primitive kind of level. I don't have any problems at all. So it's everybody else. The trouble with me is you. So that's the first level is, wait a minute. Maybe I'm the common denominator in all of these situations in which there's conflict. What might be my problem? What am I struggling with? Secondly, can I realize there's a range of choices how I can deal with that problem? Third, can I, recognizing the choices, can I pick the one that I think is best? Fourth, can I implement it? Fifth, do I allow myself feedback? Now, most people get up to four. But they don't permit themselves that fifth step of saying, did I indeed choose the most optimum one? And if not, step six, start over again. I've learned from my mistake. I made a choice that was right at the moment. And I think that's a corollary of that, is to say that no one ever makes a mistake when they take an action. A millisecond later, consequences of that action may tell them, whoops, that was a mistake. or a lifetime can go by and they still don't realize it. So most of us have no difficulty getting through the fourth step. We can see a problem. We can see there are ranges of choices. We can pick one and we can implement it. Well, that's far enough. Of course I did right. But we don't allow that next step. Was it really the best? And if not, can I start the process over having learned that that didn't work? Let me try another option that might be better. So I think those are what I refer to kind of a six-step definition of normalcy, if you will. But as I said, most of us, the more primitive individual, the more primary a struggle, the more difficult it is to even recognize a problem, let alone choices or implementation or choosing. And it's nowhere near feedback. But so most of us get through step four. But it's that feedback, did I in fact make the best choice? And if not, can I recognize that, learn from it, and go back and start again?
And you have a wonderful visual. I'm a visual person. So on page 53 of your book, you do have your chart of healthy progression. And it says that exactly, the step by step. And then if the problem's not solved, you start all over again and you do it differently and you try a different way. And the good news is, for those, you know, a lot of people, we read books and we go, okay, when am I going to get to where I can get some help here? This page 53 of the book, everyone. So know that you're not going to get to page 184 and go, okay, what did I learn from this? So you can use Dr. Cardner's book and you will understand right up in the very beginning that there's hope. There's hope for all of us out there. And so, Dr. Cardner, what are some other things that you see that can really help our listeners at home that, you know, to recognize to that point of the very beginning where you say, recognize I have a problem. What are some things that maybe would stand out that people miss?
Well, I think... if we kind of go to I love your the program title, bottom line. If we go to two extraordinarily difficult steps, one is to understand what is success, and I think it's extremely important. And there's a wonderful expression that the question is asked: who is the rich man? Because some people equate success with riches. and we can recognize in the daily tabloids, if nowhere else, that there are some extraordinarily successful individuals who are totally miserable in their lives, but by external measure or other people looking at them would think they've got the world by the tail. And in fact, they are very unhappy campers. So the issue of the question that's a parallel is, who is the rich man, is the question that's asked. And the answer is profound. He who enjoys what he has. And I think that that first step of being able to, am I enjoying my life? Am I, by no means happy, happy sometimes an elusive word. Am I contented? Am I fulfilled? And that becomes a measure of what success is about. Can I enjoy where I am? That doesn't exclude wanting some additional steps, if you will, in terms of if we want to acquire things or whatever. But and the second aspect, so that's extremely difficult to say, what can I, am I enjoying myself? Wherever I'm at, if I want to proceed further in whatever the measure is, acquiring more real estate or whatever it is, but am I happy with what I've got? And then I can move forward. And the second step is to compete against oneself. Am I being the best person I can be? And I think those two steps are extraordinarily meaningful and helpful. That we can enjoy what we have, which doesn't preclude whatever acquisitions we think is appropriate in whatever field we may have. And am I optimally operating at my fullest self? All of us can improve, as it were. And I think it's that willingness to see that there's always a little bit of a gap between what we could be and what we are, and to try to narrow that gap. And that's where understanding that we may be dragging an anchor. I love the metaphor of a motorboat. You can have the throttle thrown full forward and barely be moving along. Mm-hmm. And until you bring the anchor up, and that's what I loved about the metaphor, is it's below the depths. You don't see it, but it's part of the boat. And as you haul it up, it takes courage to be able to take whatever's below there. We don't know what's going to come up. But to be willing to haul it on board, and lo and behold, the boat moves like wild at that point. It's no longer dragging anchor.
I love that, Dr. Cardiner. Now, we're closing in our last couple of minutes here, and so here's what I would like everyone to do. Please go. Now, Dr. Cardiner, is your book available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so go out and get Dr. Cardiner. That's Cardener. Breaking Free, How Chains from Childhood Keep Us from What We Want. Please get the book. Let me know what you thought of the book, too. Let's discuss it, because I'm taking a lot from this. Love discussing books with my listeners. And like you mentioned just briefly, Dr. Cardiner, one of the reasons why I'm doing this whole series on stress and anger management is because we see it in our news today. It's all over the media. We see some of those people that we would think the most successful and should have everything going for them appear to be miserably happy. And if that's the way it is for them, well, what about the rest of us that are maybe just barely making ends meet? Well, Dr. Cardiner, thank you so much. I'm closing out the show today. Please go to Dr. Cardiner's website. That's SHCARDENERMD.com. Check out his information on there. Get his book. And thank you so much for tuning in to the show today. Check out my website at AngieStrader.com. You'll see my guest lined up. And again, I can't stress enough how important it is that we find out what that anchor is. I love that metaphor, Doctor, about what the anchor is below water that's slowing us down, what's dragging us down, and that conflict between our inner child, that child within us, and of our needs and our wants of being an adult. Let's figure that out. Let's break free. I love it. We'll be breaking free together. And that's going to wrap up the show for this week. And I look forward to talking with you throughout the week and talking with you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to What's Your Bottom Line with Angie Strader. If you would like Angie to answer one of your questions on the show, or if you'd like to discuss your question live with Angie, visit AngieStrader.com and click on the Ask Angie tab. See you again next week here at What's Your Bottom Line.